Welcome to All Road 65 Max Radio, where the road ahead gets brighter as we journey towards truth, traveling through our dreams and an inspiration into a new reality. It's time, and your ticket is waiting. All Roads Lead 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson.
Greetings, and thank you for joining me on BBS Radio, All Roads 65 Max Radio. I am your host, Pamela L. Henderson. My focus is my mission statement: to help create a quality of life through social growth, inspiring Jews to become leaders by establishing partnerships with entrepreneurs, corporations, donors, sponsors, volunteers, the community, and abroad. Please join me every other Tuesday at noon on BBS Radio, All Roads Lead 65 Max. And follow me at Quera.com, Pamela L. Space. Also, journeyofasapphire.com. My special guest today is retired Air Force Lieutenant Felipe Johnson, who states that the inauguration has come and gone. Donald Trump is once again the president of the United States. While this may surprise many, it's clear that the American people see Trump as the leader they want for this term. But what exactly makes him a leader? And how does he measure up against essential leadership standards? And that is our discussion for today. At last, I want to say thanks again, Lieutenant Johnson, and welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're so welcome. So tell me, where are you located?
I'm on the west coast of Florida in the Tampa, St. Pete area, a little south of there, actually.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know, Florida is really, really beautiful, but I don't know if I can live there. I watch too many YouTube videos, and maybe I'm coming across too many videos where I see alligators just walking seamlessly around the neighborhood. So I don't know if I could be ready for that.
Yeah, they're supposed to be afraid of people, but unfortunately, people feed them and do other stupid things, and that results in them being too casual with humans. But for the most part, they stay away from you.
So as long as I know, of course, as long as you don't approach them, I get that. But I have seen videos where people have been like walking around a lake, and then all of a sudden they just sneak up and come and get you. And I can see that what you're saying, that when people are feeding them, so anything that they see, it looks like food.
Yeah, they start to associate humans with a source of food, and they lose their fear of humans. I have some right in the pond right behind my house, and they've always jumped straight into the pond, if I've gone out there to photograph them or whatever. So that's the way it's supposed to work. They're supposed to be afraid of you.
Wow. So do you, if you don't mind me asking, you have of course you have a gate, right?
Something, a gate?
Yeah. Or a fence?
No. No, there's a cage over the pool, so that prevents them from, hopefully, from getting in the pool area. But no, it's just grass and then a pond in the backyard.
Oh my God. Bless your heart. Bless your heart. Yeah. So I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get right to it. But when I was doing my research, I come to understand you have a 24-year military career.
Right.
Tell me about that and why you joined the military, because that takes guts. And you stayed 24 years.
Yeah, I suppose there was an early influence. My father was a career Army officer. He was a JAG officer in the Army, an attorney, and eventually a judge before he retired. So there was that exposure. But really, there wasn't any pressure from my parents to go in the military at all. Perhaps quite the opposite for my mother, actually. But no, I decided at a fairly young age, probably 13 or so, that I wanted to be an Air Force pilot, and so I started doing what I needed to do in school to achieve that. And yeah, and spent 24 years in the Air Force, mostly flying helicopters and planes. Worked in intelligence as well, and also as a military attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Manila, and also worked in a staff job that dealt with aviation safety.
Okay.
And so, yeah, eventually I decided I wanted to stay in for retirement. That says something about the extent to which I was enjoying the work and that I felt it was fulfilling.
Wow, yes. And would you agree that the military now trying to recruit is a lot harder than it was when you were in the military?
Yeah, it's hard for me to admit how long it's been since I first came in. But yeah, I do understand now that recruiting is becoming more challenging, and there may be a lot of reasons for that associated with, the way younger generations see government service now to some extent, and other factors. But yeah, it's apparently a challenge.
Yes, it is. So, Lieutenant, you have stated that President Trump's first term serves as a case study in poor leadership, with specific examples of his failures in core incompetencies. Can you elaborate about that? Because I know we're talking about the first term, and he really had a hard time, I must say.
Yeah, so generally speaking, yeah, I cover a lot of ground in the book, and I kind of divide that up into to different areas. But in general, the first, failure I saw was what I saw as his responsibility as a public leader, his fundamental responsibility as a public leader, and that included defending the Constitution and key institutions, promoting core values and principles, freedom of the press. Those kinds of things. And then, of course, there were competencies associated with organizational leadership and management. So I address a lot of those, include, understanding your organization, your role, serving your people, how not to undermine your organization, which I think is something we're seeing a lot in the news right now, if you consider the organization to be the federal government as a whole. Competencies like the ability to seek counsel and expertise and decision making, communication and messaging. And then I also address the importance of character and leadership, specifically humility, respecting the dignity of others, discipline and self-control, empathy. And then a lot. Oh, go ahead.
No, not interrupting you. I was going to say yes because I don't want you to tell everything because I do
Well,
have
okay.
questions
Yeah.
of
No, that's
each
just an outline,
one.
kind of most starting point.
And you're just like going on. I'm like, okay, great. The traits that define principled ethical leadership, in your opinion, why does it matter for the country?
In terms of having character in leadership, why that matters?
Absolutely.
Big picture wise, if there's a lack of trust because you have unethical leaders, that can diminish trust in democratic institutions more broadly. And that's not a good thing for a democracy. That's when you start experiencing democratic backsliding and such. So it's just as important on a national scale as it is in an organization. Specifically, there are certain things, again, like humility, empathy, discipline, self-control, honesty, decency, respect for dignity, those things. And I could tell you more specifically why I think they matter, which I think was kind of what your question was.
Right. But that's okay because it's a lot. And it does, when you speak about that, and the president has a very interesting job, I must say. right?
Very
And
important
you
job.
talk about, yeah, it's very important. And when you take that position, you have to acknowledge that there's going to be those who do not like you because of your beliefs and your strategic creativity that you see, which can do better to move the country forward. And you're going to have those whom just absolutely align with your beliefs because there are certain things that they may see that can help move the country forward as well. So I do agree to that. The real world consequences of leadership failures, as you stated, illustrated by the Trump administration from his first term, in your opinion, what exactly happened? Like, can you pinpoint just one thing in your opinion that you felt that really happened pertaining to a little downfall that President Trump had experienced?
Yeah, just one example, I think, diminished trust in what we call the mainstream media, for example. That's one consequence of a president constantly attacking the media and, calling them the enemy of the people and so on.
So you think that President Trump was attacking the media himself,
Wasn't.
or do you believe that because he did say some things about the media, but we all know that the media does overrides in it their steps when it comes to, creating their stories and things like that. And I think that was part of the problem, just from what I've seen.
No, that doesn't explain his attacks on the media. It's his attacks on the media are just one example of his attacks on any kind of institution or organization that tries to hold him accountable. And it goes beyond that for him because of his personality, because of the extent of the narcissism, anything that's unflattering is essentially, not true or disinformation or again, just because you don't like the stories that are told or that are reported, I should say, doesn't mean that it's not factual, and it doesn't mean that, the press in general is the enemy of the people.
Okay, I can agree and disagree somewhat.
But I mean, if you to say he didn't attack the media is to ignore. To ignore the tweets, lots of them. And I give plenty of examples in the book on the chapter on freedom of the press and the chilling effect it's having now because of lawsuits against media organizations that are now reluctant to even run certain opinion pieces. Because they're afraid of getting sued, and the costs associated with that. And it's not because they want to, print lots of lies constantly. It's anything that's critical or unflattering makes you a target. And that's not what we're used to in this country when it comes to freedom of the press and freedom of speech.
So true. That is so true. President Trump has made some drastic changes within the last 3 months of office, such as immigration, federal workforce policies. Again, what do you think about, in your opinion, have the executive orders made any positive impact on America's financial stability as of today?
Well, let me back up and say first, my focus, for example, in the book I just wrote, is more about leadership competencies and traits, and I try to stay away from policy. I'm happy to comment on that now, though. But in the book, I tend to stay away from policy unless there's a particular episode that I think is important to illustrate a particular leadership competency or trait, but. To your question, yeah, the And if you're talking about the tariff policy, for example, I think most economists and financial experts would say that it's not a good thing. Not just because it's hurting the markets right now. That will hopefully eventually change once the tariffs are withdrawn or relaxed. No, it's another indication of what I would see as chaos in policy making right now, whether it's economic or arbitrary cuts to government agencies. And it's not just chaos, it's incompetence. When you fire large swaths of people from critical government agencies and then realize a week later, or because there's attention in the media that those were mistakes and have to try to rehire them, that's incompetence.
Okay. I understand that because that was a little over the top. I must.
Well, not
I'm
only over the top, but
not.
likely illegal as well. And so many of these actions, you talk about executive orders, so many of these are being challenged in court, and the courts are finding in many cases that they were not likely legal. And there's a lot of pushback. And the concern there is, with respect to our democracy and the rule and law more generally, is the Trump administration going to adhere to the decisions made by courts?
Yeah. But also, when you look at with everything that's going on, and me too, I try to stay is kind of like a little stand backish from the politics, but I like to talk about it a little bit because it affects my life as well and my family's life. However, when you talk about change, when you look at what President Trump has already done, I don't see not man president from the past really sat down, opened up the books, and say, hey, if we have this deficit, how are we going to find out where is all this unnecessary spending or things that were not needed or we're overstaffed? I haven't seen no one do that but President Trump.
Well,
However,
it has happened before. I saw a good special about this actually last night. Fareed Zakaria did a special on this called "Attacking the Government" or something. And Al Gore apparently had a program rather called "Reinventing Government," where they tried to eliminate a lot of redundancies, try to find a way to save money, but it was done in an orderly fashion. People were actually people who knew the agencies were looking at them versus kind of just people going in and not really understanding the missions of these agencies and just making cuts because either they want to downsize government generally or because they think it's going to create a lot of cost savings. Firing a lot of people is not going to create a lot of cost savings. And when you talk about the deficit, I don't even think that's a big concern because I think if they get their way, there are going to be a lot more tax cuts on the way. And just like in Trump's first term, that's going to drastically raise the deficit.
in your opinion.
No, it did. It did. And it's not my opinion. That's going to happen unless you drastically cut Social Security or Medicare or defense spending and one of the other huge parts of the budget. If you cut taxes and if you cut large swaths of the IRS like they just did, the very people that are there to try to get income from taxes, especially from wealthy people who aren't paying their fair share, then that's more money that you're losing and effectively more that you're adding to the deficit.
That's true. I have to agree to that. Okay.
You don't have to, but thank you.
That's The personality traits that you stated that
Yeah.
undermine effective service. Why prioritizing loyalty over competence depends these issues, in your opinion, are so important? And the reason why I may be asking and going over some of the questions, because in your book, it relates to a lot of things about leadership. And so I love to get a clear understanding. So I may ask that question, but again, I may ask that question again, but in a different way.
Yeah, you just mentioned loyalty and competence. So this was less of an issue, I think, in the first Trump term, but for this administration, there was much more of an emphasis on loyalty. People who were going to be loyal to Trump, and I'll get into this later perhaps, but that can be a kind of loyalty that I would characterize as unprincipled loyalty, and that's where you're putting loyalty to an individual above loyalty to the Constitution, for example, or the organization or the mission you're leading. So the problem with one of the problems with emphasizing loyalty is it's twofold. One, you tend to sacrifice competence when you're choosing loyalty over competence. Yeah. Some of the picks for the cabinet, I think, exemplify that. People who were not necessarily the most qualified, clearly not as qualified as people from previous administrations, whether they were Democrat or Republican. The other problem with choosing emphasizing loyalty is that people in various government agencies are going to be afraid to speak up when they need to say something that leaders may not want to hear because they're going to be afraid of being branded as disloyal.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. Thank you for sharing it. So, you are an author of a book. What Hangs in the Balance? I admire the title. I love it. It is clear. What were you thinking, or why did you name the title What Hangs in the Balance? That had really interested me.
Yeah, a shout out to Kia Harris, my I forgot what her title was. Shame on me. But anyway, on publishing, she plucked that out of the introduction I had written. That was not the title I intended to go with originally, but she saw that in the introduction to the book I had written and thought that it would make a good title. And I agreed. What hangs in the balance is another way of saying what's at risk. What's at risk if we don't have principled, ethical, competent, and selfless leadership? So at the organizational level, it's things like morale, retention, the ability to recruit, and ultimately, most importantly, mission accomplishment. At a more macro or national level, what hangs in the balance, if you don't have good leadership, are things like quality of life, even life itself, good governance, rather, trust in democratic institutions, national security, and even the rule of law. So those are the things that hang in the balance.
Very good. I like that. What's hanging the balance? Okay. Tell me about the importance of building trust. The text explores how disciplined and ethical behavior fosters trust and accountability within organizations. And the reason why I'm asking that question is because I'm a firm believer as well. You know, it's that old saying that sometimes times in organizations, you have people in positions that are supposed to be professionals and they're not professionals. And that's one thing that I learned on my journey of hiring people, doing third-party business with people. And I had a hard time with that in somewhat ways because the professionalism of what my expectations are were not what they were giving. And it seems like I was having such a turnover until I really had to take a step back myself and say, hey, it's time for me to revamp what my expectations are.
Okay, that's interesting. So you think you had the problem was your expectations, or do you think your expectations were reasonable? And then what occurred to me when you first mentioned that was, are your expectations related to competence or more to more like an ethical trust concern?
Ethical trust.
Okay. Yeah, I mean that's hugely important in any organization. If subordinates don't trust their leaders because they're either unethical or dishonest, or they promise things that they can't deliver, if they have obvious conflicts of interest, that's going to create some distrust. And then leaders also have to engender trust in the sense that their subordinates know trust, where the direction the organization's going in, for example. But so were there other specific, I'm trying to think of specific things maybe that you may have been experiencing with regard to trust, without getting too specific, maybe that were ethical concerns to you.
Yeah. Well, one of them, okay, I hired an executive. And the background and, his resume, I loved. But it just did not match the integrity.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not saying that a lot of times, no one is perfect. I'm not perfect. I have flaws. And I get that. But I take what I do, my passion, my focus, I'm very serious about that. So it's a lot of different things. Okay, let me give you an example. So I have an international program and I choose girls from all over the world to come here to go to school, right? The laws are different. The laws are different in countries like Italy, Spain, and in France versus the laws here in the United States. So girls 15 years old, they can date older men. And there's no issues. But here, you can't do that. And here, my organization, I really, really, when you're here, this is the sanctuary because you're here to learn, you're here to receive your certification to move forward. And so I can feel good that what I'm putting in is helping each individual grow. However, there are other influences who have nonprofits and may do some of the things that I do, but the integrity of the responsibility is questioned. So I have one girl that may say, well, I can do this over here because, this is what they do, but over here, I make it clear that I'm not running a Epstein, a Weinstein, a Bill Cosby. We're not doing that. You're here to learn.
So it sounds like the word that came to me was expectations, and if you have integrity issues with somebody you've hired, or for example, were there clear expectations perhaps regarding ethical conduct or what was expected before that person came into the organization? That's a challenge, I think, in government service, for example, because people come in with, disparate backgrounds, different levels of ethical education, for example. But at some point, people have to respect the core values and principles of the organization they're joining. Otherwise, they're not going to fit in very well. And more importantly, the organization's not going to be very effective, especially if that person who's not respecting the core values and principles is in a position of leadership.
Yeah, so true. And I did have that conversation. What I come to find is that a lot of times in different organizations, they're a little bit more lenient. It's okay. And we see this now when people are getting caught with doing certain things that they've been getting away with so many years. It's okay as long as you don't get caught.
Gee, that sounds familiar. Accountability is so important, and when there's a lack of accountability, what happens? People feel like they can continue doing what they're doing when it's unethical, especially in the case of a president if Supreme Court's determined that he's essentially has immunity from anything that's considered a core, constitutional duty or responsibility. But in general, accountability so important for leaders to hold people accountable, both because it's the right thing to do and to set an example for everybody else, and to avoid getting into prejudicial or preferential treatment. As I think they used to say in the military, different spanks for different ranks.
Tell me why character matters. The book highlights why traits such as humility, empathy, respect for dignity, self-control are vital for effective leadership. And I know you spoke a little bit about it earlier, but this is my question now. So can you tell me, in your opinion, why character matters?
Yeah, absolutely. So you people are not going to, again, it goes to trust. People are not going to have faith in a leader who is acting in an unethical manner, who lacks humility, empathy, honesty, and so on. People are not going to want to work in a toxic workplace. They're going to leave. But more importantly, it harms the employees, potentially, depending on what kind of ethical violations happen because of a lack of character, is going to potentially put their mental health or safety at risk. It's going to hurt morale, and that's going to hurt mission accomplishment. So that's the short answer. And then I can get into why certain elements or characteristics of character, the ones I've already mentioned, why specifically they're important.
Give me one example.
So humility, for example, in public service, that allows for a respectful approach to the Constitution, along with organizational core values. And it also promotes their preservation, which is so important in a democracy. It's important for respecting rules and ethical considerations in general. It allows leaders to admit what they don't know and remain open to different points of view, as well as to change course if things aren't going well. Humility is also important with respect to diplomacy. And it helps to build trust, as we mentioned before. It also encourages accountability and transparency when we make mistakes. As a leader, you make a mistake, and if you have enough humility, you can share that with subordinates and share the lessons learned. Subordinates will respect that. It's also needed for self-awareness to allow us to examine our own strengths and weaknesses. And finally, it keeps us from demanding that to which we're not entitled.
So true. So true. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Responsible decision making. In your book, you said readers will learn the importance of seeking counsel and expertise to support sound decision making processes.
Can I
Tell us
follow up
more.
on your last question real quick, though?
Yes.
I forgot to mention something important. So this whole
Okay.
notion of can you be a good leader if you don't have character? I would say that you cannot be an effective leader if you lack character and integrity, because I think they're fundamentally, they're fundamental aspects of good leadership. Setting the example, as I mentioned before, that is your job. Again, people with ethical issues are invariably going to violate trust, and they're going to abuse power. And sometimes that's a result of personality disorders that kind of fuel the pursuit of self-interest, and that results in abuses of power. So, sorry, what was your question?
Thank you, because that was a good point. Absolutely. I was asking about in the book, readers will learn, you stated, the importance of seeking counsel and expertise to support sound decision-making processes. And that is the number one learning and training in any organization.
No matter how smart you are, you're not going to be an expert on everything that goes on in your organization.
Absolutely.
And so obviously you need to know which experts or advisors to consult, and you need to be able to objectively evaluate that advice. Now, there are barriers to doing that, and some of them include self-interest, arrogance, the inability to suppress personal bias, and also if you're constantly censoring or criticizing or contradicting your experts, that's not going to help you seek counsel and expertise either.
Yeah. Loyalty dynamics. In the book, it differentiates between principal and unprincipal loyalty, providing strategies to counter undue influence and abuse of authority, as you were speaking a little bit earlier. That got my attention. Can you elaborate more? Because that's the biggest thing, that's the biggest issue in any organization.
Yeah, so principal loyalty, you're
Yeah.
asking about? Yeah. So
Yes.
if you look at the loyalty dynamic that exists in an organization, or even in people's personal lives, we often too often see this notion of loyalty that's not based on principle or some code of conduct. I say that loyalty for loyalty's sake is not a virtue. It should be based on some code of conduct or the law, or if you look at the definition of loyalty, it's like faithful adherence or unswerving allegiance to a person, like in marriage, for example, or
Right.
to the Constitution, to the country, et cetera. So what we see, though, is employees who are showing unprincipled loyalty to their bosses. In other words, their bosses are unethical, and they're ignoring that, and for many reasons. And then you have leaders who expect unprincipled loyalty rather, from their followers, and actually practice unprincipled loyalty with their subordinates, again, like preferential treatment when their employees are engaged in misconduct. So, where we sometimes hear about this is like in law enforcement organizations. I'm just using that as an example, where police officers in TV shows, but in real life as well, of course, feel this
Right.
pressure to cover for each other when somebody's engaged in misconduct. But when you report serious misconduct, you're not selling out one of your own. You're not being disloyal, because that person has already been disloyal to you, your colleagues in the organization, when they've engaged in misconduct and essentially, ignored the core principles and values of your organization. So by reporting that misconduct, you're in fact being loyal to your colleagues, your superiors, and the ethics and laws you pledge to uphold. What we saw, for example, in the wake of the George Floyd murder in 2020, was an emphasis across the country in police departments. There was an increased emphasis on bystander intervention training. That is, you see one of your colleagues, even if it's a superior, doing something wrong, and you're getting involved, you're reporting it, if nothing else.
Yeah, that is true. That's true. In a time when exceptional leadership is more crucial than ever, what hangs in the balance equips leaders with foundational tools? Give me some examples of effective leadership of the foundational tools that the book offers.
Again, for the book was kind of written from, from my experiences as a former public servant in government. But I think pretty much all, if not most of the leadership principles and traits I address apply to the private sector as well. So in terms of tools, I talk about, of course, the fundamental responsibilities of public servants. But then, more leadership management, organizational leadership and management tools, like how to understand your role in the importance of understanding your role in an organization, the limits of your authority, the roles of your subordinates. The better you understand their roles, the better you can lead them. Again, things like how not to undermine your organization, and that includes, vetting properly when you're hiring. Some of the things we already talked about, like decision making and seeking counsel and expertise, communication and messaging, the ability to communicate clearly and concisely in context, not retaliating against your employees, for example. Those are things that apply to organizational leadership and management. Character, we already talked about. Not engaging, how to spot and not engage in undue influence and abuse of authority. I mean, big picture, my big concern when I wrote this book is that a lot of these, what I consider to be an aberration in both style and substance of leadership in Trump's first term, my concern is that these things, these practices are going to be normalized, and that would be detrimental to our democracy more generally, but to any organization. I mean, I wrote the book more for a leader in any organization, not for national or elected leaders necessarily. So these ideas apply to almost anyone, and of course, anyone can be a leader. It's not necessarily having a title or position; it's about setting the example.
Right. But anyone can't be a leader, in my opinion, because you have people that are in leadership that are not good leaders, as I
Right.
see today. So not everyone can be a leader. And a lot of times when you just have money that gives you power is why you are a leader. That's it. But if
Right.
we're really, choosing and saying, hey, I think that Jim or Sue would be a better leader than Linda and Doug over here, and who has less money. But sometimes, as we see,
Oh yeah, when I say anybody can be a leader, what I mean is anybody can exhibit or practice leadership because they are doing the right thing. They're setting the example. They're influencing others in a positive way, even if they're not formally in a leadership position. But yeah, money or even being elected to office doesn't necessarily confer wisdom or character. Some people arrive in elected office with a lot of experience and character, but that's not always the case because obviously getting elected is for the most part a popularity contest.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because, see, my beliefs when it comes to like political leaders that's, want to be president and everything, I feel that we should keep political leaders whom have the experience and who has spent time in office and even went from different ranges as well in growing should be the ones that we choose for presidents. But who am I, right?
Yeah,
We
and you know, experience is important, but so is character. So I guess you can have it the other way around too. You can have people who have plenty of experience in their fields in government, for example, but lack character. And you know, one would hope that they wouldn't get to that point. But again, you don't have the same procedures that you have, for example, in the military, where you know, ideally, and most of the time, people who lack character, who lack integrity, don't make it too far.
Okay, yeah, I can really see that in the military. Absolutely. Yes. Okay, well, we're up for time. Is there anything else you would like to share about the book?
About the book. No, I again, yeah, I encourage anyone who's especially those in public service, but again, I think the book applies to anyone, whether you're in the private sector or public service, or if you know somebody who's in a position of leadership and management, I would encourage you to pick it up.
Yes, I do agree. I was a public servicer, which I still am, but I was a notary public, which a notary public has a very, that's a job that you really have. Your character, your dignity, everything is displayed. And I have your book, and I'm going to make sure that I send it to Sacramento here because that's something that it needs to be, presented because in that position of being a notary public, a lot of people fall off because they lack a lot of humility, empathy, all the above, the leadership skills and everything. So I thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. And how can someone purchase the book?
Yeah, so the best way to find out more about the book is to go to my website, which is I'll use the English pronunciation, Philip, Philippe. It's the French spelling, but philipjohnson.com. And you can order the book essentially on any website or that you can buy books on. So easy to get. And yeah, the website has more about me as well.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, readers, I have reached my destination. As always, I leave you with this quote. What separates the winners from the losers is how a person reacts to each new twist of fate. Yours truly, President Donald Trump. With that being said, do have a beautiful day. And until next time, cheers.
Thank you for listening to All Roads 65 Max Radio with Pamela Henderson. Join us every other week on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio Station 1. And please visit allroads65max.org and become a volunteer or sponsor and be the change you want to see in this world. With your help, we can make a difference in our society and uplift those who so desperately need our help. Thank you for tuning in.